You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Christine Buckley, and this is Field Talk, a podcast in which we explore the work of authors whose papers have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Susanna Clusea-Trias, a researcher at the Center for Invasion Biology at Stellenbosch University in South Africa. Her paper in the August issue of Ecology looks at the importance of melanism, or dark body color, to thermoregulation in lizards. She found that for these cold-blooded animals, body color can play a big role in keeping warm. Dr. Clusea-Trias, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So first of all, I should ask you why body temperature is so important to lizards.
Well, basically, temperature is very important because it affects all biochemical reactions in living organisms. So that means that, for example, metabolism and a lot of the physiological reactions are dependent on temperature. And because lizards are ectotherms, meaning that they need the surrounding environment to regulate their body temperature, they are at the mercy of these temperatures that surrounds them. So if temperature goes really high or is very low, the lizards will not be able to be active, because they have temperatures that are optimum for their performance.
And how do lizards regulate their body temperature when they have all of these extremes going on in their environment?
Well, lizards typically have several strategies, and the major one is to move in their surrounding environment, and that's called behavioral thermoregulation. So when a lizard is active during the day, for example, a diurnal lizard will start the day by being quite slow, and as soon as the temperature in the environment starts increasing, the lizard warms up and is able to be active.
So they have to move between the warm and cool spots, and usually these warm spots are the sunny spots. And in your paper, you studied another interesting facet of this thermoregulation, and that has to do with the color of lizards.
Well, across the groups of lizards that we have, some groups are heliothermic, meaning that they are using principally basking as a behavior to gain energy from sunshine. Those species that we call melanistic species are just species that have a darker pigmentation. And this darker coloration basically makes the skin having a reflectance that is lower than a lizard that will be in a lighter coloration.
In these lizards that are darker in color, what does that mean for the amount of heat that they take into their body?
So a lizard is in equilibrium with the environment, as I explained before, because they are ectotherms. And one of the ways to gain energy is to absorb solar radiation. And skin reflectance is a component of that absorption. So if you're dark, you will absorb more radiation. And if you're light, you'll reflect more radiation. So by choosing closely related species, we have the advantage that not only they are related very closely, but also they look very similar in morphology, except for the skin reflectance, obviously. But they have the same shape, they have the same life history. And one of the main things that is distinct between the three is the skin reflectance, which we are interested in.
In your study, you conducted the theoretical approach and an experimental approach and also observational studies in the field. Why do you think it was important to use so many different approaches to study the effects of melanism in lizards?
Well, there's been a few studies that have looked at these hypotheses in other taxa, such as insects, and they found quite a strong support for it. But every time that scientists have been looking at these hypotheses in reptiles, there's been quite a mixed support. By using three approaches to test the same question makes it a much stronger study. So not only we're looking at a theoretical model, so we take these biophysical principles to see what is the effect of having melanistic individuals and non-melanistic ones, and we can calculate how different it is between the two. But we can also have some experimental work where we control the conditions of the environment around the lizards, and we can see how much being melanistic affects the total thermal budget. And the last component, which is the field component, we can use real data and actually look at activity patterns of the lizards to actually understand if it matches what we're finding under control conditions.
How do you measure the skin reflectance of lizards?
So the skin reflectance is usually measured with a spectral reflectometer, and it has to be one of these spectral reflectometers that have a very large range of wavelengths. So if you think about color, you're thinking about what you see in your visual range. But for a temperature study, we want to know as well how much reflection there is in the portion of the spectrum that is in the infrared, because animals, organisms, are able to get energy from the infrared thermal range, and therefore you need this special machine to actually get the whole reflectance in that range.
Do you put the lizard into a spectrophotometer and then it shines some light on the lizard and puts out a reading about the reflectance?
Yeah, the spectral reflectance has like a laser beam, and you just have to put a patch of its skin against that.
How do the lizards like being put into the spectrophotometer?
You can actually get the value with dead lizards or even parts of the skin of the lizards, but we use live lizards, and we're used to handle them, so they're okay.
So you found that there seems to be a small difference in achieved body temperatures among the melanistic species and the non-melanistic species. Do you think that it's large enough to affect their life histories and their behavior?
Well, certainly we found an effect, and the idea was that although it was small in magnitudes, it was from 1 to 2 degrees, there are certain periods of the day when it's very cold where that 1 to 2 degrees can make a difference for activity. So some lizards that are quite slow in the morning, if they are able to heat up a little bit faster than a lizard that is lighter in coloration, then that will have great benefits. Also, if you think about terms of how much time the lizard can spend above a threshold, that 1 degree will make a difference throughout the day. We calculated, for example, for some of the sites that were very warm, if the critical thermal maxima, which is the maximal temperature that the lizard will tolerate before it would lose writing response, for example, let's say it was 37 degrees or 40 degrees, by modeling, we can calculate how much time a melanistic lizard will spend being not being able to be active above these thresholds. And sometimes just 1 degree difference between the two colorations will make a difference throughout the day of like 17 minutes of no activity, which can be quite substantial for lizard activity pattern of a day, of a month or the season.
Right, because if a lizard isn't warm enough to move around and be in its environment, then this could have effects on how much food it can find and whether or not it gets mates, right?
Certainly. So at the end of the energy budget, of the annual energy budget, you might have quite an extensive period where the lizard cannot function and be able to look for mates, feed properly.
It sounds like that 17 minutes would really add up over the course of an active season.
Yes.
You had 3 different species of lizards, and you had 3 different study sites where you studied them. How did you choose these study sites, and what was it like being out there in the field during your study season?
Well, basically, and I should have mentioned this before, these species don't have overlapping distributions, so which is really interesting to us because that means that they live in certain environments with certain conditions. And within these environments of each species, we chose some representative sites. So, for example, for the light-colored species, it is distributed in quite a broad range, but mostly lowland, whereas the other species, the one is really in coastal areas where there is often fog and high winds. And the third species, also melanistic species, was from a mountaintop.
Is it difficult to get to your mountain site?
It's you have to use 4x4 because you need it's all through a dirt road, or you can walk. But I mean, with all the equipment that we have to carry, we have to use 4x4s to get all the food and equipment up there.
So how do you catch these lizards?
We usually for the ones that we have to catch to put transmitters on, we use nooses, so they're long metal pipes that have a fishing line inside with a loop at the end. And so we go into the crevices and try to catch by putting the loop on their neck, and then we can just pull them out. So it's quite a delicate task, and we have to be careful not to hurt them, but it works quite efficiently.
I guess they're difficult to catch by hand since they're down in crevices and they're probably pretty fast.
They are. They have high fidelity to their crevices and they stay quite close to their crevices. So as soon as you approach them, they just disappear. Mm-hmm. So the only way to really catch them more easily is to try to noose them from inside the crevices.
So what is your favorite part of your job?
I think that the best part of my job is to actually be exposed to all steps or all the components that you've just talked about. The idea of just reading some theoretical papers and see what are the models out there, and then designing some experiments where you test those predictions, and then be able to go to the field and work with real data and test those predictions as well, and see how the theory that we're actually working on stands strongly with what it's out there with the ecological reality.
And what are your future plans with this research?
Well, there are several directions. I mean, broadly, I'm interested in thermal biology, but also to understand how different animals cope with changes in the environment. And the idea is to understand more of these responses so that in the future, when there is changes that are predicted of climate, we know what the animals are capable to do in terms of behavior, but also adaptations to those changes.
Dr. Clusea-Trias, thanks for being with us today on Field Talk.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Susanna Clusea-Trias, a researcher at the Center for Invasion Biology at Stellenbosch University in South Africa. I'm Christine Buckley. Thanks for listening to Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.